Yeah, thank you. Indeed, I am Antti Kante, as you heard, and from the Helsinki University of Technology, and I will be talking about a thing I called RUMP, and it's about kind of kernel hacking using kernel code in, or the reuse of kernel code in user space. Now, as an introduction, let's consider the typical case where you write some code. In the case of a file system, your first option these days is to consider, okay, do I write it in the kernel? Do I write it in user space? If I do it in user space, then I have generally more stable interfaces available, and I generally have more interfaces available. If I do it in the kernel, well, then it runs in the kernel, and you know, running in the kernel is cool, or so they say. Now, if we actually already happen to have code which runs in the kernel, my point here is to demonstrate that there is no need anymore to re-implement that same code in user space. You can just take the kernel code and drop it in, run it in user space. If you want to run it in the kernel, run it in the kernel. If you want to run it in user space, run it in user space. Of course, the converse doesn't really apply. If you have a file system written for user space, you don't want to drop it into the kernel. And I want to do this in a maintainable way so that there's no code modifications to the file system code. There's no ifdefs, there's no code forks, so actually the thing works and continues to work in future revisions of the operating system. I also want to support the full file system stack. So, well, typically if you have a part of some kernel code which you run in user space, for example, for unit testing, it's just a very small portion of the kernel code. It doesn't do very much. It might not do anything useful except for testing, and our one of our goals is to find ways to reuse kernel code. And why exactly am I working on file systems for this? Well, kind of on a very high level, a file system is a very nice and very, very simple thing. Of course, like when you get close to it, it gets very complex, and actually these days I happen to call file systems fail systems. So the implementation status. I've done my implementation on NetBSD. It's production ready, it's available, you can use it. There's a total of 13 NetBSD kernel file systems supported. You'll see that there's four classes of different file systems. There's first of all the normal disk-based file systems like the CD file system, EXT2, the MS-DOS file system, the FAST file system, and so forth. Then we have a memory file system. Then we have NFS for a network file system. That's currently the entry support is limited to the client. I have some hacks to make the server work also, but let's just say that having the server or the server implementation is interesting. And then other, in this case, signifies PUFs in the list, which is the NetBSD equivalent of Fuse. Why we'd want to run that in user space, I'll come to that shortly. And this, the implementation, as I said, is production ready and has been shipped in source and in binary with NetBSD starting from NetBSD 5.0, which was released last month or 2 months ago or something like that. But actually, I'm gonna be talking about the current status. So what does RUMP mean? Well, apparently it means plenty of things, not all of which were apparent to me when I picked the name. But they quickly came apparent to me when after releasing the code, people started telling me that they really like my RUMP. So, but the funny acronym type thing is Runnable User Space Metaprogram. And a RUMP, it means, I mean two things. So one is a user space program which includes kernel code and executes it in the process. And the second meaning is the framework which makes this entire thing possible. And then more specifically, a RUMP kernel, so the process executing the kernel code, i.e. RUMP, consists of two parts. So there's the application part, which in the minimum is the main function for a user space program. And the RUMP kernel is all the kernel code which is linked with that process. And then the host operating system is the operating system running the RUMP, which, as we'll see later, doesn't necessarily have to be NetBSD. So, short outline, motivation, why am I doing this? Then I'll go over some interesting use cases. I'll dip into the implementation a bit and then provide some evaluation. So my original motivation for this was as unholy as doing kernel development or making my life easier. But your motivation to stay up for the remainder of this talk, it actually turns out that there's many more things you can do with running kernel file systems in user space. There's a very significant security benefit to this. Then we are able to now reuse the kernel file system code in user space tools, and then we get this kind of cross-platform cross-pollination where we can actually run file systems from one operating system on another operating system. So how's this different to anything we already have these days? Why do something like a user mode operating system runs kernel code in user space? You can do kernel development in an emulator in a virtual machine, what have you. Well, the point is not necessarily to do anything per se new, but rather to make things easier. Like there's a reason why in high school you don't do derivation using the epsilon delta technique. It's just not very convenient. So I'm trying to solve one problem and solve it well and solve it in a way where it's usable. So I do things like, I don't care about the general solution. I do things like, okay, well, we need some kind of virtual machine or virtual memory subsystem to run a file system. Well, we don't actually need virtual memory in user space. Kind of the host operating system takes care of it for us, so we can apply some shortcuts, apply some hacks, and we'll later see that these hacks are actually maintainable. And this solution is also different from running a full operating system in the sense that it's a direct host service, so I don't need to install another user LAN to run the file system. I don't need to maintain anything. I can just run it and use it. And how it differs from user space file systems, like, for example, Fuse is I'm interested, I have code, I'm interested in running it. I'm not interested in an interface and writing code for it. So, use cases. Well, first of all, let me start by explaining the two modes in which you can use RUMP. So you can either do a regular mount of the kernel file system code, which is the figure on the left. So in that case, it's completely application transparent. So the application doesn't know that your kernel file system code is actually running in another process here in user space. But this requires some kernel support. It requires namely the user space file system framework in the host kernel. And second of all, it requires mount privileges. So all users might not have privileges to mount a file system. And this arrow just signifies that kind of the RUMP implementation then uses some services from the host operating system. Let's say it needs to read or write a file system image, so it needs to access the data. Then the figure on the right is that is interesting. Okay. Well, I don't know what's happening. Well, I'll just continue. The figure on the right is no, that's not the figure on the right. We seem to be experiencing technical difficulties. Switching. Yes. Nope. Okay. Yeah, so just, I don't know, shaking a weird way. Okay, so the figure on the right is the application library approach, where the kernel file system is running next to the actual application which uses it. And this mode has the advantage that we don't need any special privileges. It's entirely contained in one process. But of course, we have to then write an application which explicitly uses the file system interface. Now, one interesting thing I mentioned earlier is that I can run puffs in user space, and there's a fuse emulation library for puffs. So with the one on the right, or well, actually with both of them, but I can also write applications with the same interface which support fuse file systems. Now I need to. Just a problematic slide. Well, I don't usually do graphics in slides, so maybe I did something wrong. So, security. A common scenario, consider this. Someone hands a USB stick to you anywhere. You plug in the USB stick, you read or write files, or do whatever. Well, if the file system is suitably corrupt, you can get a system crash. If the file system is really evilly corrupt, worse things can happen, like exploits. And these kind of exploits are extremely difficult to fix in the file system code. They are difficult to detect, and they are difficult to fix. And frankly, I'm very surprised that this kind of exploit isn't being talked about more. It's not being exploited more. You know, if I were bored and it happened to be rainy enough in November, I would probably craft some evil file systems and distribute them to people at places like I just need to find a place where to distribute a few hundred USB sticks to unsuspecting people. But this can be easily solved with RUMP. So the NetBSD implementation is usable in a way that you just specify a RUMP flag to the mount, and then after that, it's mounted in a process instead of inside the kernel. So now you get some evil file system which tries to crash, which tries to do arbitrary memory access. It's limited to a single process. So which communicates with the kernel through a well-defined channel, so damage is isolated. So then, kernel development and debugging. Well, like I said, this was my original motivation for this work. And well, I really dislike using emulators, virtual machines, etc., for this kind of job. They just have too much baggage. I need to maintain them. My scripts bit rot. I need to quickly test something. I spend an hour updating my test and development environment, etc. Plus, all my problems aren't necessarily reproducible in a development environment, lacking network communications, lacking appropriate applications, and so forth. So this makes it easier, and I can use normal user-based tools for this. Let's say Valgrind is especially useful. But the thing about doing something this for kernel developers is that kernel developers already know how to do kernel development. They have their own set of tricks and so forth. But what this actually also allows is for regular developers and maybe even in some case advanced users to do kernel development. So I'll tell one interesting story which happened a while ago. So one guy had this 5 terabyte file system, and he did some operations on it, and then he had about four terabytes free, and after that, Makedir said, no more space. So he asked on the mailing lists, you know, you got the regular answers, are you out of inodes? No, blah, 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 blah. So then, well, nobody helped. Then he tried asking me directly. Then I went through the same thing, you know, are you out of inodes? No, blah, 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 blah. So the case got interesting for me. Then I looked a bit at the code path involved. I said, okay, well, the problem is somewhere in the block allocator. But if I knew where the problem was, you know, I'd fix it myself. But here's what you can do. You can do you can run rump in GDB, then you can put a breakpoint into the block allocator, then you just execute the makedir command in another window, then you single step to find out where the error is. So a few hours later he said, yeah, here's this, and this seems to return a negative result when it shouldn't. And so it was a sign extension problem and it was fixed. But what's even more interesting about this is that I happened to meet the guy about a month ago in Canada. And then while collecting my regular beer for services rendered, he told me that, yeah, this was, you know, really easy. And then he mentioned that, you know, I don't have a formal background in computer science, so that was my first time using GDB. So I'm happy his first time with GDB was with kernel code. So, some utilities. Well, everyone knows mTools. I used to love mTools. As a kid, you know, I'd have had a floppy. If it was corrupt, if I forgot to unmount before playing Frisbee or something, my system didn't go bye-bye. And there's a lot of other tools in this class which all implement a file system driver for a user space process, but they all have different syntax and, yeah, they have to do the re-implementation. So what Arno Ismail did last year for his Summer of Code project is that he took all the NetBSD standard file utilities like ls, cat, cp, etc., and instead of doing system calls in them to access files, he modified them to do calls to rump. And the result is that now we have a lieu of utilities which operate on images instead of the host operating system file system namespace. So for example, you have ls to which you just specify an image path, and then you can specify all the 10 billion parameters which you specify to ls normally, and then you know the output is what you expect. Or then you can create directories to the image and so forth. And as I mentioned earlier, we also have Fuse support on top of this, so these utilities also support Fuse file systems. Of course, the usage isn't quite that simple, and actually that's something we're still working on. So if you're a user interface expert, please come and talk to me after the talk. So another example of a utility, MakeFS, which, well, it works like MKISOFS. It just creates a file system image out of a directory tree. And this was originally done by Luke Mewburn in 2001 when NetBSD was made fully cross-buildable. Before that, we mounted a file system, copied files over, unmounted it. But, you know, cross-build, you can't depend on the host kernel to provide anything. So that took 100 hours of effort from him, but then I did a re-implementation in rump, or the FFS driver took 100 hours of effort. I did a re-implementation in rump and didn't take that long. It supports many more file systems, and this is another example of a tool you can use. So let's move on to the implementation, just a quick overview. So almost all kernel code is non-magical. It can run anywhere. Like almost all kernel code can do that. It's just a set of interfaces that it uses. It depends on which defines the environment, and if it calls malloc or kmalloc, if it calls pthread create, kthread create, and so forth, if it calls get new vnode. Now, the problem is that we take the file system, then there's a set of dependencies around it. Then we take those dependencies, well, the dependencies depend on something and so forth. So we actually have to figure out a method to have the file system and its dependencies, dependencies, and so forth in the process, or in a library so that we can link it and have a runnable process. And my implementation strategy, well, let's say this is kind of more hacking than science, but my implementation strategy was to use as much kernel code directly as practical. What's practical? That's the real real thing here, which actually I can't give a really concise answer to. But then I use, for some situations, I use services directly provided by the host. For example, I use pthread for threading and locking and so forth. I don't attempt to implement everything from kind of the very low-level bits. And one thing I did is I observed that, okay, we have this source module structure. It's actually not used for anything currently, so it's kind of arbitrary. So, you know, if I have a file system, I have a set of routines which I need for the dependencies, and they have some, you know, their dependencies are fairly good. But the same module has also other routines which I don't need, and they introduce weird dependencies, then I just split the thing. Of course, I can't do this in a very, very, how should I say, volumetric manner, because if I start moving code all around, then I get yelled at. It's a project with hundreds of developers, so there needs to be some consideration. But luckily, there's only a few files I had to modify. So this is just an example of, you know, this is an oversimplification of the thing, but there's arrows going in all directions. But turns out that you find the closure fairly fast. There's actually, if you're interested, there was just this week an article posted on Slashdot which did analysis of the dependencies of file systems. So, some evaluation. Okay, so I mentioned that the implementation depends on kind of a certain level of re-implementation, like the virtual memory interfaces, and then it relies on the source code module source module boundaries. So if someone adds something somewhere which depends on something, how often does this thing break? Like you think intuitively, well, at least I thought, that this kind of system might be fairly unmaintainable. So here I've done a repository analysis from August 2007 to December 2008. Yeah, and repository analysis of the NetBSD source repository. And here you can see the total amount of commits to the current NetBSD kernel was close to 10,000 for that period. And commits which touched some part of RUMP were around 400. There were slightly less which only touched RUMP. I think those were mostly the ones where I was doing some development. It was a bit over 300. And then the amount of commits which are involved in RUMP breakage are here. So that was around 20 commits. So I think it's safe to say that kind of the myth is busted about something like this not being maintainable. So, portability. Well, C is portable, yeah. And user space programs are portable, right. So technically, we can run file systems from different operating systems in user space on another operating system. I've run the NetBSD file systems on Linux, then I did a quick prototype hack of a similar RUMP thing for Linux, and I ran one Linux file system in user space on NetBSD. Now this mostly works. There are some details which you need to take into account, mostly that you need to have matching types. And one good example of this is recently time T was bumped to 64 bits on NetBSD, and I happened to run the 5.0 release on my workstation, which still has 32-bit time T. So when I make a call from the application portion with 32 bits to the kernel portion with 64 bits, if I don't do any translation in between, bad things happen. So there's some manual translation which takes care of this, but I haven't still solved this in a generic fashion. So, performance. Well, to be frank, I don't really care about performance. I care about it enough so that it's usable, but you know, I'm not seeking to advance performance to state of the art in this kind of manner. So, well, it's usually usable, and that's been enough for me so far. So, conclusions. Possible to take a general purpose operating system take the file system code, run it in user space as a server as part of an application. The benefit, we don't necessarily need to re-implement the kernel code for user space if we would like to use it in user space. We get the huge security benefit, we get the kernel development benefit both for kernel developers and for people doing bug reports. And of course, you should go ahead and implement this on your operating system too, so that I can use your operating system's file systems on NetBSD. Now, if you're interested, go and download NetBSD, try it out, and please submit bug reports. Questions?
Harry from University of Wisconsin. I really like this work, so I assume the buffer management layer is still inside the kernel. Is that correct?
Well, that
where,
depends
like,
on
you
which...
do the caching.
No, the kind of... it's both inside and outside, kind of the buffer management for the actual backend, let's say, if it's a disk. That okay. might be inside the kernel, but then in user space there's a... another layer.
Okay, so there will be like a double buffering?
Yeah,
sense. Okay.
Currently.
Okay, all right.
So I really like this. And my question is it obvious which part of the interface or of the interface code to port or which parts to rewrite, which parts just to take of the kernel? Or is that just a gut feeling of what to take?
Yeah, just a gut feeling.
And would this be applicable to other subsystems?
Other systems?
Other subsystems in the kernel, like,
network drivers. For example, for NFS, I need networking support, so I have networking support in user space, too.
Okay, thanks.
I'm curious as to how this interacts with the memory subsystem, specifically if you're using a file as your swap file instead of a separate partition.
Can you elaborate?
How closely intertwined is the memory subsystem and paging, specifically requiring pages to be pinned in physical memory, versus using the swap file, which it knows is on disk? How does that interact with the transfer to user level?
Well, I'm still not sure what you mean, but kind of the interface between the back of the kernel in user space and the actual kernel is the normal interface, so it's just read and write.
I'll take it offline.
Okay.